Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. If you love cats, you will not only love this show, hopefully you'll learn a little bit too. Sarah Brown received her PhD on social behavior of neutered domestic cats while working at the Anthrozoology Institute at the University of Southampton in the UK. So that sounds fancy. You know she's got to be fancy. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Steve.
You are the
Thank you for that.
You are the author of The Hidden Language of Cats, How They Leave Us at Meow, which is, in fact, literally the case. But I want to start at square one. How did our domestic cats become our domestic cats? Or is that question a bad one because they're not domestic in the first place? So I'll let you talk about that.
Well, yes, that's quite a lot of questions.
I know.
I'll start with the first one, which is how we, which I think was your question, which was how we became acquainted with them in the first place, which was around, is that right? Is that what you're asking me?
Yep.
I think it is. Around about 10,000 years ago, that happened, thought to have happened, when human communities sort of changed from hunter-gathering to growing crops. And so settlements developed. This is in an area called the Fertile Crescent, which is sort of northern Africa, western Asia. And in these new farming communities, they began to store their grain. And this grain began to attract rodents. And then these rodents, in turn, attracted the attentions of wild cats that lived in the area. These are called North African wild cats. And they were solitary animals that lived in the area, but they would start to hang around these new settlements, hoping to pick up some of the mice and rats around the grain stores. And it's thought that the farmers, realizing that these wildcats were actually quite useful as pest controllers, would have put up with them, tolerated them. And the wildcats would gradually get used to being around each other and around people. And at some point, the braver ones must have ventured into the farmers' homes and become more like pets, and then had kittens, which would have become even more like pets. And so it's thought that gradually they crept over our doorsteps and kind of self-domesticated themselves.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
some people say they're not really domesticated.
All right, so it's like everything else cats do. They made the decision that was beneficial for them. And if they are domesticated in the first place, which I believe they are, but if they are domesticated in the first place, they domesticated themselves. However, you just brought this up. You write about it in the book, The Hidden Language of Cats. The big question is, are they domestic in the first place?
Well, they have certain qualities that fit the criteria of being a domestic animal, which is that they have a tendency to become friendly towards people. And, you know, obviously non-domestic animals don't do that, but it is only a tendency. So they, you know, they still have to be taught at a very early age that people are good things. They have to be handled as kittens, and that's something I talk about quite a lot in the book. But yeah, they have a tendency to live near people, and the ability to live near people, the ability to live near other cats, which is a big deal for a, you know, what would have been a wild cat that didn't live near other cats. And so certain qualities they have that are domestic, but then there are other things like breeding. And although we do breed cats, the vast majority of cats breed, you know, by themselves, wherever they want, whenever they want, and very much not under our control. So that is the criteria that they don't really fill for being domesticated. You know, we control the breeding of our domestic farm animals, for example. But
well, I could argue that with dogs, if they're not spayed or neutered, like cats, if they're just outdoors, and there are places in the world where dogs are predominantly outdoors, sometimes they have a name.
Yes.
Sometimes they have a name, and they're considered pets, but they're outdoors. They're not necessarily even fed by the people that live in that community. Those dogs just breed randomly, just like cats do. But no one says that dogs aren't domestic.
You're right. And I think perhaps people refer also, when they say they're not domestic, to just the way that cats do tend to live a slightly more independent life. They're not as, you know, not as doting on us as our dogs are. They seem to be not quite so far down the domestication route, let's put it like that, as dogs are. But they have developed an amazing ability to communicate, even though we don't always notice.
And I want to talk about that. But interestingly enough, at one point in time, cats were absolutely revered as gods, quite literally, yeah, in parts of the world. Then, not too much far down the road, cats were blamed for everything bad that seemed to be happening, including, and they were called, witches, or they worked with witches, as I forget what the term, familiars, I believe.
Familiars.
On one hand, and they were literally skinned to death. They were hung because they were responsible, presumably, for everything bad that was happening. And in part, the result of that happened around the Great Plague. Cats were blamed for the plague. Well, killing cats only increased the rat population at the time, and it was rats that carried the fleas that caused the plague. So can you comment on how, on one hand, they were revered as gods, and on the other, I blame you for everything bad on the planet?
I think this pretty much summarizes the roller coaster journey that cats have had with humankind right from the outset. They are either loved or hated, and they seem to go from one to the other quite easily, but yet they amazingly have survived and spread throughout the world, and they can live in pretty much any environment. That they can live in social groups, they can live solitary lives, they can live feral lives, they can live curled up in your armchair. And this adaptability, I think, has made them survive these terrible fluctuations in our attitude to them, because it must have been amazing, I think, that any of these middle ages cats that were being persecuted along with the witches ever survived. How did they survive? They must have just hidden away and then come out again when it was okay. I think they've just become amazingly adaptable, and that's the secret of their success.
All right.
And they learn to communicate with us.
Well, which, again, I want to talk about that communication when we come back here. But first, I do have a question for you. And that question pertains to why we seem to understand dogs compared to cats very, very well. And cats are still a mystery to so many, even scientists like you. Why is that?
Well, I think it's all down to the fact that cats came from a solitary wildcat ancestor. So these ancestors, all they had to communicate was scent. They didn't need anything else. They didn't meet each other very often except to breed and raise their kittens, and then they're on their own again. So, yeah, they just use scent, which works really well long distance. You leave a mark, someone picks it up later. But dogs, on the other hand, descended from wolves, which were a very social species already. They had a full set of wonderful social signals that dogs inherited. And so all dogs had to do was learn how to use these signals with us, whereas cats had to think, how do I communicate with other cats that seem to be now around me all the time, and all these people that I hopefully might get some food from? And so they had to develop a whole new set of signals to achieve that, visible ones and audible ones that we would understand. And because that's taken a while, we're only just beginning to realize that all these signals are actually there and evident, unlike the dogs' ones, which are far more obvious.
All right. Sarah Brown is the author of The Hidden Language of Cats. We'll talk about cat language. We'll talk about what those signals are. And my big question is, do we understand cats better than they understand us, or do they understand us better than we understand them? We will find out when we come back on WGN. Sarah Brown is the author of The Hidden Language of Cats. She received her PhD on social behavior of neutered domestic cats while working at the Anthrozoology Institute of the University of Southampton in the UK. What is anthrozoology?
It's the study of relationships between people and animals.
So it's that simple. It's not like you need to work at a zoo to understand anthrozoology, which is kind of a I ask in part because it is a growing field, not only in the UK, but in America as well.
Yes, definitely. And that was like the very first place, I think, that started to study it. And then it has spread. People now are fascinated by this relationship we have with pet and other animals, but, you know, dogs and cats and all our favorite animals.
Well, being on the board of the Human-Animal Bond Association, I understand, and that relationship is incredibly important. But to understand that relationship with cats, you have to understand how they perceive the world, I believe. And it begins with their nose. Everything is about sense of smell. So if you walk into a room, it would be mighty rude for me to come up and sniff you. And I recognize you first by what you look like. Interestingly enough, when I walk into a room, even my cat, who knows me, knows what I look like. And I try to apologize for that every day, but knows what I look like. That cat still, well, the cat knows it's me, has to come up to me and give a sniff to confirm somehow that it is me. Can you talk about not only cat's sense of smell, but how they also use pheromones?
Yes, so they come and check you out. Partly to check it's you, but also to check out what other new smells you've brought in. You know, where have you been? You know, who have you been mixing with, and what other animals, and especially what other cats might you have mixed with? So sniffing is hugely important for cats. You know, it's very important to let a cat sniff you, hopefully your hand, when, you know, as you come into a room, let them have a really good sniff. And then pheromones are more to do with when they're leaving scent themselves. They like to rub on things, which if you notice when your cat rubs an object or the side of a door or, you know, skirting board, they might leave a little smudge over time as they keep rubbing the same thing. And that's a deposit of scent from one of their scent glands around their face. And these are really important social smells for cats, as are the scents they leave when they scratch, which most people don't realize that when a cat scratches on a scratching post, hopefully, they're not just doing it for nail health, you know, to keep their claws healthy. They actually leave a deposit of scent from the glands between their toes. So it's another form of leaving their own scent around.
Now, I want to talk about that because cats and dogs have two ways in which they smell the world, for lack of a better way of saying it. And that's not quite right because they use their nose, which is their sense of smell, their olfactory organs, far more efficient than our own. We can't even imagine how cats perceive the world with their sense of smell. But that's only one way, and that works one route. And you explain it really well, by the way. I thank you for that, in the hidden language of cats, because by using pheromones and the vomeral nasal organ, or Jacobson's organ, that's a completely different route in which they perceive it's not quite their sense of smell, and it goes to an altogether different place in the brain. Can you explain that?
Yes. I mean, it can be quite a long explanation, but I'll try and keep it short. But yes, it's the vomeronasal organ, the VNO, is a special organ they have in the roof of their mouth, which is basically like another scent-smelling system. And this is more receptive to scents that are social in nature. So they, when a cat comes across a scent that is like a pheromone, like another cat has left a mark, they will open their mouth and do this flamen, sort of gaping behavior that makes them look a bit sort of dreamy and distant. And then they often use their tongue to sort of waft the smell up through the entrance to this organ in the roof of their mouth. And this then connects directly to a different part of the brain, to the normal smelling system. And presumably activates a different response. So somehow or other, they know that this scent is a social scent, and this activates the vomeronasal organ. Sorry, I haven't explained that very well at all.
No. I think you did. And for example, let's say I did this and offended my cat in this way. I dared to go to an animal shelter and visit where all the cats are. And then I come home. And the cat smells, as you said, my cat will smell, or cats will smell to identify that it's me and also where I've been. But to get more information, cats are able to do that by slightly opening their mouth, taking in these pheromones, presumably, that have been left on my pants or my shoes or whatever, and get tons of information that I'm not even sure we understand.
Exactly, yes. And then it connects to a different part of the brain, which I think is amazing. The normal smells connect to the olfactory bulb, and smells from this organ connect to what they call the accessory olfactory bulb. And so, yeah, they're getting a whole second set of information, which I just think is amazing.
So cats really communicate greatly with other cats and with us, even though we have no idea, because we cannot sense cats' pheromones. But as you described, I mean, they're depositing pheromones when they rub against our leg or when they kind of scratch on us a little. They're depositing pheromones. Or if they're upset at the world for some reason, there's a territorial issue because, say, cats are walking through your neighborhood and your cat indoors sees it and sprays the wall. Pheromones come out with all that, right? And that, so do they expect us to understand what the heck they're saying?
I don't think so. And I think they've worked out that we don't actually understand it, which is why they've developed all these other amazing behaviors like meowing and, using tail positions, which we hopefully recognize some of. But meowing in particular, they seem to have harnessed the fact that we vocalize. That's what people do. We speak to each other, we speak to them, and so somehow they've worked out that it's best to use the same mode of communication back.
Hence
the development of the meow.
Which I want to talk about. And I want to talk about how we communicate with cats, and maybe, in some cases, how we misunderstand what they're telling us. And we'll do that when we come back on WGN. I have the most exciting news for you ever. It's back! The Petcast! Years and years and years and years ago, when podcasts were first developed, it was Milt Rosenberg, the late Milt Rosenberg, and myself who said, okay, I'm going to do this at WGN Radio. Yeah, I've been working at the radio station that long. So I had a podcast, which I called a Petcast. And it lasted 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and it kind of fizzled away, and that was fine, but we've brought it back! So, if you go to WGNradio.com, which I know you do every day, and look at the top, it says podcast, and under the podcast, you kind of highlight over that, and you see all the myriad of WGN Radio podcasts. Included is the Petcast. And I will tell you, I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to talk to the very best people. You can hear it at WGNradio.com. Sarah Brown is the author of and reveals, for the first time ever, The Hidden Language of Cats, How They Have Us at Meow, which is the perfect, now let me say that again, the perfect lead-in for what we're talking about, because when cats communicate with one another, I don't believe, Sarah, and you write about this in the book, so I cheated. They generally meow so much. When they communicate with us, this is a communication the cats didn't have as we go back in time when the wild cats were first around, but they've developed it over the literally centuries to communicate with us. And one way they do it that's special, very special, we ought to feel special, is the meow. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, so I studied, for my studies were based on feral groups of cats living in rural England. And one of the things I found over the years I studied them was that they very rarely meow to each other, which was a surprise to me, because at that stage I thought, oh, just cats meow and that's what they do. But they never did. Well, they might have done occasionally, but very rarely. But obviously everybody that knows cats knows that they do meow often and quite, persistently to people. And it seems that they've developed this meow from the little tiny mews that kittens use with their mums when they're growing up, and then continue to use them when they go into new homes and develop these meows with their new owners, their new families. And research has, you know, has been quite a bit of research on meows, and they've found that the meows of a domestic cat have actually evolved to a higher pitch than those of the ancestral species, the African wildcat. They sound, the domestic cat that is, sound much sweeter and pleasing to our ear than you know, than this lower pitch of the ancestor. And also, amazingly, this pitch, this high-pitched meow that cats do, is very similar to the pitch of a human baby's cry, which, as we all know, is very hard to ignore. So somehow they seem to have worked out that the sound of a meow pitched at just the right level is the way to get our attention, which I think is spectacular.
Which cats are very good at doing. I mean, if a cat wants your attention, that cat will get your attention one way or the other. And if something doesn't work, then they'll try something else until they find some way to get your attention, to get oftentimes what they want. Are there different levels of communication where cats communicate? Do they actually have a, I guess this is what I'm asking, do they have a language of sorts with us, even if we don't always pay attention?
Well, yeah, this is very interesting because the thing with meows is that they are extremely variable, not only between cats, and but they're also variable between, you know, one cat's meow from 1 minute to the next. And so for that reason, people do, when tested, struggle to tell apart, you know, different meows. What, you know, if you present meows taken in, made in different contexts, people struggle to find that context without any other cues. So if they're just listening to meow, they can't always work out, you know, is that a happy meow or a sad meow? But what people presumably really do in real life is that they look for other cues from their cats at the same time. So the cat will meow, get your attention, and then almost show you what it wants, you know, rub around the food cupboard or come and sit by the back door if it goes out, or whatever it is that they seem to want at that moment. They try and tell you in more ways than just meowing.
Mm-hmm. And it's not only the meow, it's the context, as you talk about, but it's also the body language. We seem to read dogs, I'd argue not great, but reasonably well most of the time. Maybe we're hardwired because we evolved with dogs. And if you look at their face, they have more facial muscles than cats have. So we're able to tell more about how they're thinking. We're not as good at reading cats, are we?
No, we're not. They've got much more poker faces, if you like, than dogs. You know, they can't raise their eyebrows and look, you know, cute and quizzical at us. But they, you know, research has shown that they actually do have a really wide range of facial movements. They're just not really very obvious. So, for example, there's 7 different positions that have been sort of logged for their ears. You know, their ears rotate independently and move 180 degrees, and they, you know, they register a whole range of emotions that quite often just pass us by, I think, as do their tail movements. We don't always notice it, which is why I hope that reading about it might help people notice, you know, make people notice more, stand back and look at their cat a bit more closely and think, oh, what does that mean?
Well, not only can you read about those tail movements and the hidden language of cats, you have graphics that show what those tail movements are, so you could actually see them. Are you referring to the grimace scale when you talk about facial structure of cats and what cats are trying to tell us? And you could tell sometimes by looking what your cat is feeling, including whether your cat is in pain or not. And cats are magicians, I think. They're great at hiding pain.
Yes, that's a more specific use of what they call the facial action coding system, which they've now extended to many animals, many species, but cats included. So it's called CatFacts. And, you know, this has done an extensive analysis of cats' facial movements from video, you know, from very close analysis of videos to see, you know, how they move their whiskers in great detail, as you say, and all their facial muscles, including their ears. And it's given, you know, a whole new, you know, outlook to what cats are registering, that, you know, what they are communicating in their faces. And, you know, hopefully, I hope over time that we can find an easy way of just observing that, you know, with the naked eye, because some of these movements are so subtle, it's hard to notice on your everyday, you know, cat in the home.
Yeah, what I tell people to do is take their phone and videotape sometimes, but put it in slow.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, but moreover, put it in slow motion. And
yes,
you're
yes.
able to notice things that you never would have, because cats are so incredibly subtle. Sometimes they don't want us to know. So with meows, they are saying, please pay attention to me and do that or do that or do that. Get my food or get my toys. But oftentimes, they don't want us to know. And this is one way you can know. Or you could read the translation of what cats are telling us and the hidden language of cats, how they have us at Meow. Dr. Sarah Brown is here, and we'll be right back as I want to talk about misunderstandings we sometimes have and how sometimes we think the cat is telling us one thing, but in fact, the cat is saying something completely different. That's next. Dr. Sarah Brown is the author of The Hidden Language of Cats, How They Have Us at Meow. And sometimes we misunderstand what they're trying to tell us. But I want to back up and ask about you, Dr. Brown. This is going to be all about you. Why did you choose to study cats and not dogs, or maybe not raccoons, or maybe not squirrels, or maybe not monkeys?
Well, I sort of fell into it, really, if I'm honest. I mean, right from small child, I loved animals of all sorts, as do many people. And I went to university to study zoology. And while studying, I decided that animal behavior was the thing I loved the most, and that this was what I wanted to do if I could work with animals and learn about their behavior. So when I left university, I was very lucky to get this job in the Anthrozoology Institute, where we studied cats and dogs, actually, and the relationships with people. But as a sideline to that, I was allowed to do a doctorate. And I thought, you know what, I think I'm quite interested in cats, because there's not so much done on cats, you know, behavioral-wise. So that's how it all started. And then I found two groups of feral cats, one which we set up ourselves for, you know, trap, neuter, release, and another one in a hospital, and studied these, you know, groups of ferals for a few years. And that's how it all began, really. But it was definitely a great choice.
So you're coming home from the office after you've been gone all day, and you walk in the door, and your cat, maybe at the door, maybe down a hallway, maybe sleeping somewhere, but sees you and comes running the opposite way, something dogs rarely would ever do, and then begins to scratch at the sofa. And we say, you're a bad cat. This is one of the misunderstandings I'm talking about, because the cat is just expressing excitement, actually, to see you. So you guys, happily, in my opinion, which in this case I do respect, do not declaw, by and large, in the UK. We're doing less and less of that in the US, incidentally, but it still occurs here. But no matter, if the cat isn't, the cat scratches at the furniture, and this could cause someone to say, I want to declaw the cat, or at the very least, say, you're a bad cat. In fact, as I said, the cat is just expressing excitement. Is that one of the misunderstandings that people sometimes have?
Yes, I think so, very much so. And as I said before, the scratching is so important to a cat. It's a natural behavior. And I think a lot of the misunderstandings we have with cats is that we don't realize that the behaviors that they perform in our homes are very natural behaviors that they have to express. So scratching is one of those. They need to maintain their nails, and they need to leave marks. They need to leave scent marks from the glands between their toes. And they like to leave a visible signal, which is what scratching does, as we well know.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way of signaling for other cats to see. And so all they need is the right outlet. And so looking at your cat and thinking, why are they doing it, rather than they're just doing that to spite me, is a really good thing to do. And provide them with new things to scratch, make the new things more attractive than the thing they're scratching now, and try all different types. They'll all scratch something that you provide eventually if you try hard enough.
So cats outdoors are typically living in groups, though not always, and they're what's called facultatively social. So they, different than wolves, they don't hunt together, or different than lions, there's a cat example, they don't hunt together, they don't share meals together. Indoors, here's what I want to ask you about, and in the U.S., mostly they are indoors only, so they don't get the opportunity, which I'm all for personally, because I don't want to see cats getting hit by cars or chased down by coyotes, so, or whatever. But indoors only, they can only go to as big as your house is, right? And that's it. Yeah. And then you introduce another cat. So in America, I think the number now is 2.1 cats. I don't know about that 0.1, who that cat is, but it's over two cats, just over two cats per household on average. So if you have a cat, you might probably have two or even three cats. But no one's asking the existing cat, well, do you accept that cat or that cat or that cat? There's no dating service for cats. So which cat do you want to live with? We're not asking them that. We're bringing in whatever cat it is. That's not a natural situation for cats, is it?
No, not really. Well, not at all, in fact, because even cats that live outside in feral colonies can choose who they interact with. They can avoid cats they don't like. They might have to live still in that same area to take advantage of whatever food source they're using. But when you bring another cat into a cat's territory or a cat's home, yeah, they don't have any choice. They have to either get along or not. And cats are actually innately solitary. They come from a solitary ancestor, so they're programmed to live alone originally. But that said, domestication has equipped them with the ability to live alongside other cats when need be. But some cats are better at this than others. So it's always best to think carefully about the cat you already have before introducing another. And if you do, this introduction should happen very, very carefully, very slowly. As you know, you have to introduce their scents first of all, keep them completely separate, and only very, very gradually, let them become acquainted, because, they probably wouldn't have chosen that cat that you have chosen to live with.
Yeah, we can't consult them and say, well, which one would you want? Another misunderstanding is that most people that have cats feed the cat out of one food bowl. But to my knowledge, cats outdoors don't share their meals. We're doing it wrong then, aren't we?
Yeah, no, and I'd say the number one most important thing, once you've got two cats living or more cats living in a household, is to have enough resources to feed them separately, separate bowls, separate locations if you can, make sure they've got enough beds, enough scratching posts, enough litter boxes. Everything has to be multiple everything so that they can choose where they go, rather than having to be in the same space as a cat that perhaps, makes them feel a bit uncomfortable or that they don't particularly get on with. And yeah, no, cats outdoors, they don't hunt together. Obviously a mother cat will bring food back for her kittens, but they don't, they mostly just do their own thing.
So how important for this intelligent species is it that if we keep them indoors only, and you and I don't know, we've not talked about this, may disagree about this because our cultures are different for cats. I am fully supportive of cats being indoors only. But then I also say it is not a good idea. It is necessary to enrich their environments.
Yes, 100%. That as much as you can do, and obviously people have very different opinions about indoor, outdoor, and that debate will go on forever, I imagine. But if you do have a cat indoors, the most important thing is to provide as much as you can for them to do to replace that, you know, stimulation that they would have had as a as an outdoor, you know, cat originally, you know, a wild cat. Then let's say that they need to replace, you need to replace all the things that would be outside. So something to chase, some toys, something to scratch, places to sleep, places to hide. And increasing the vertical space is a great idea because, you know, even if you've got a small area, you know, for your cat to live in, you can greatly extend that by shelving or cat trees, you know, just raising the level. And as I said, enough, if you've got more than one cat to have enough of these things that they can have their own space and do their own thing and possibly timeshare if they want to use the same things, but not, you know, that they can both go and do what they want whenever they want. But enrichment is so, and puzzle feeders are great, you know, try and not just feed your cat, you know, constant supply of dry food, use some puzzle feeders, make your own if it's, you know, they're very expensive. You can do so many things. Cardboard boxes, as we know, are the number one favorite toy of most cats.
Yes, absolutely true. And there's so much more in the book, The Hidden Language of Cats, How They Have Us at Meow, Dr. Sarah Brown. A revealing conversation. The cats are going to be very angry at you for revealing their hidden language. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
This was at 54.6 decibels. How loud is that? That is louder than most vacuums. It is louder than, no, it's not, than the laughs John Williams gets for his speed jokes. No, those are louder. But that's pretty loud, 54.6 decibels. Well, why am I asking you about that? Well, that's the volume of a cat purring in Cambridgeshire, England. 14-year-old cat named Bella, who broke the record, the Guinness Book of Records, loudest cat purr. Her owner, Nicole Spink, says when Bella purrs, which is all the time, she has to actually turn up the volume on the TV. That must be one happy cat. Speaking of happy cats, I've got a kitten. Well, not a kitten anymore. Groucho is about a year and a half old. But for those of you on TikTok, how many of you are on TikTok? Well, for those of you on TikTok, check it out. Groucho_ The Funny Cat. What I try to do is provide both entertainment and information at the same time. Here's some information. You emailed me, Steve, at stevedale.tv, and asked about the expression, the cat got my tongue. Where does that come from? Listener Larry wanted to know. Well, Larry, here's the answer. According to what I found, it goes back to the Middle Ages. If you happen to bump into a witch on the street, and that witch typically had a cat, she would say, my cat, no, she wouldn't say that. She would say, oh, dearie, my cat is going to steal your tongue. That's how witches talk, right? I don't know whether it worked or, let's see. Yep, 1, 2, 3, testing. Yeah, I'm good. I'm okay. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.